you want two things. You want to minimize the cost of carrying those extra goods, right? And you want to maximize the number of happy customers. Right? If everybody had infinite safety stock, your customers would always be happy, but your costs would be infinite, right? So it's a trade-off, and that optimization problem is finding the right point where you're meeting both of those objectives in a dynamic and highly complex scenario. So that I think is one crucial supply chain use case that DeepRL can be applied to.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is the Digital Supply Chain Podcast, the number one podcast focusing on the digitization of supply chain. And I'm your host, Global Vice President at SAP, Tom Raftery. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Supply Chain Podcast. My name is Tom Raftery with SAP, and with me on the show today, I have my special guest, Chris. Chris, welcome to the podcast. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for that. So my name is Chris Nicholson. I'm the founder and CEO of a startup called Pathmind. Pathmind applies a type of AI called deep reinforcement learning to problems in industrial control and supply chain. The interesting thing about deep reinforcement learning, and I'll call that DeepRL just to save some time, it's on the forefront of a lot of current research, and it's capable of making strategic decisions that can improve operations. So we all suffered through a lot of supply chain breakdowns in the last year or two, and we anticipate more on the horizon. This is a kind of AI that can help make many of those physical systems more resilient. And that's what makes it interesting now.
Okay, I mean, we're familiar with AI theoretically. We've all heard about the way AI is helping in the supply chain. How is this deep reinforcement learning, or DeepRL as you call it, how is that different from the AI that we've all come to know and love in the last few years?
Yeah, it has similarities with a lot of the machine learning that's been in the news for the last, say, decade or so, because it uses deep neural networks, just like a lot of other machine learning does these days. But it does it uses them in a different context. So a lot of the machine learning you will hear about is engaged in perceptive tasks. So things that you and I can do in under a second, like recognize an image. So I see your face, I say that's Tom. You see me, you say that's Chris. That happens really quickly. Snap. DeepRL is often engaged in sequential decision-making. So a path of decisions that takes place over time, where the later decisions depend on the earlier decisions you make. Image recognition isn't like that. So in those sequential decisions, we can begin to solve strategic problems, right? So what do you do as you proceed into deeper into a chess game, right? What do you do as you proceed deeper into, say, processing an item as it goes through a factory or routing that item across the world? So those sequential decisions actually open up a whole array of applications that are pretty interesting, and that we humans have a hard time doing well all the time. And when you do them well, you're often considered smart. So these algorithms are helping us, I guess, be smarter, act smarter, or seem smarter at least.
Okay. We know, you know, from having listened to a lot of people on the podcast here and from having worked with these things, that the machine learning algorithms and AI in general typically requires large data sets to train off. Is that similar for DeepRL?
Yeah, it's hard to avoid. A lot of work is being done on that. But yeah, you do need data of one sort or another. Now, the interesting thing about sequential decision making, say, in physical systems, is that you don't have infinite data based on infinite historical scenarios. You have a narrow corridor of historical data. What happened, right? And that's what you can train on if you're constrained to historical data. And you know, as people who watch the stock market are, you know, fond of saying, you know, the future is not the same as the past. New things always happen, yeah. Right? So you can't necessarily predict all of the future simply by training on the past. And that's where deep reinforcement learning tends to rely on simulations. So a simulation is a virtual model of a physical system. Some people call them what if machines. You know, that you set them up to explore possibilities. And in that simulation, that replica of the real world, you can bake in variability, right? You can copy the physical system and then you can say, but what if demand varied by 50% over this period? How would the system respond? What would the bottlenecks be, right? What if these machines failed, then what would be my options for responding? So simulations have been crucial. For example, agent-based models have been crucial in responding to COVID. They were at the heart of many governmental responses. And that's one reason why people shut the schools down, is because they identified schools as a primary vector of transmission for the pandemic. So you can get these strategies that might be painful, they might be unforeseen, right? But they can be highly effective, and it might go against our gut instinct, right? So simulations allow algorithms to train on data, synthetic data, that goes beyond the historical corridor.
And very often, machine learning and AI are referred to as kind of black boxes, because it's very hard to know how an outcome has been achieved by an AI. Is that the same for DeepRL as well?
Yeah. So the thing with neural nets, including the neural nets embedded in DeepRL, is that they are what we call large parametric models, meaning they're just a bunch of numbers. They're cubes of numbers called tensors, right? They're available for us to stare at, but they're more machine readable than human readable. So then you get to the question of explanatory power. Why do they decide what they do, right? And it's not, you can't just say, well, because there's a 5 there and a 7 there, right? That's not really a good explanation, right? So you come to the question of auditing those models, right? That arises a lot in fairness, right? Talking about bias and fairness in algorithms. And by auditing, I mean, you look at the decisions they produce when you expose them to data, right? And you see if those decisions seem to make sense, right? And so there's a human in the loop, maybe not for every decision, but definitely for the auditing stage. With these DeepRL models, if you see them, their decisions play out in a simulation, one thing you're looking for is, what is it doing? And does that make sense in an old way? Does that make sense in a new way that I haven't thought of? Is this plausible enough for me to actually implement in the real world? Right. So those human audits are a way for the humans to bring explanatory power to the algorithms, to be, because they're developing a new theory of the world based on what the algorithm may surface for them.
Yeah, because that was going to be my next question, in fact, is how do you double check that their output is a good one? I mean, for want of a better way of putting it.
Yeah. Yeah. And before we go there, Tom, I just want to say people overestimate the explanatory power that human experts have. So there's a bit of a, and I don't want, I think algorithms should be audited, but there's a bit of a double standard being applied, because a lot of human experts, I should say some can explain very well, and others find plausible explanations post facto, right? Which is all fine. That's just what we do as a culture, right? But the demand that these algorithms explain very precisely how they do what they do is really a sign that people are less certain about them, mm-hmm. right? It's really a sign that they need to build trust. I think the best way to build trust actually is to combine these decision-making algorithms with domain experts, right? So that the two of them, the machine that's kind of an extension of our thought and our senses, and the person that can handle context and knows the history and can kind of cut through ambiguity, those two things need to combine, right? The most powerful configuration for us right now, and of course we can see this because I'm speaking to you across many miles, right, through undersea cables. The most powerful combination is humans plus machines. So I don't propose that the algorithms behave, act all by themselves, right? I do think that they can augment us and we can augment them in ways that will make kind of a fusion that is more powerful.
Okay. You will need, though, to have people who are capable of ceding a certain amount of trust to the algorithms, though, which, for some can be challenging.
Yeah, well, trust, Rome was not built in a day. Trust is not won in a day. But there are lots of ways to get these algorithms up and running to show you their results where you're not actually controlling the machines. right? They might just be suggesting things. So decision support is a typical structure where you start presenting the algorithm's decisions or suggestions as optional, right? And you start habituating people to seeing those decision suggestions and kind of seeing how things play out without the suggestions. Maybe they try them sometime. It depends on how high stakes the system is. But the longer people are exposed to decisions that they see might make sense, right? Or that they see cause better results, the more they're going to trust, right? And then you, what you really need to build over the long term are systems that ensure that the algorithms continue to train off of recent data, right? And adapt to the world, right? So if you imagine, first of all, that the algorithms are useful, and you just have to keep them, they have to keep being used. So you have to keep feeding them. Right? You have to keep them in touch with the world.
And can you speak to some kind of supply chain examples, given that this is the Digital Supply Chain Podcast, where in kind of supply chains could this kind of thing be used? And, you know, when we speak of supply chain on this podcast, we typically, you know, go all aspects of it, everything from the planning and engineering of the manufacture of something through to the manufacture of it, through to the logistics and delivery of it, through to the operations of it, through to back to recycling and et cetera, back to stage one again.
That's a good question. So I think one of the primary use cases in supply chain is multi-echelon inventory optimization. Right? So meaning every supply chain we're talking about is multi-echelon. Right? There's just many nodes in the graph. Those supply chains involve many components kind of coming together to form fully assembled items most of the time that go from factories on one continent to retail and distribution centers on another continent. And those supply chains, in order to be resilient, cannot run too lean, right? And people have made a big deal about lean for the sake of efficiency. That's great. But if you don't have a buffer, you're gonna hit a stock out, and that's gonna make some people unhappy, right?
Yep.
So the whole question is, what is the size of the buffer you need? What are the safety stocks that you need, right? And getting those levels right is an optimization problem. So it's an optimization problem that people have been working on for many years. There are some great solutions out there. Not all of them are very dynamic. One of the advantages of deep reinforcement learning is that it's very dynamic. Right? It can respond to a lot of variability in the data, and supply chains are obviously subject to a ton of variability, both in supply and demand and breakdowns in the network itself. Right? Deep reinforcement learning in this context that we've discussed can train on that variability and can find the best ways to allocate resources in order to maximize the kind of efficacy and efficiency of that network at the same time. So what you want two things. You want to minimize the cost of carrying those extra goods, right? And you want to maximize the number of happy customers. Mm-hmm. If everybody had infinite safety stock, your customers would always be happy, but your costs would be infinite.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a trade-off, and that optimization problem is finding the right point where you're meeting both of those objectives in a dynamic and highly complex scenario. So that I think is one crucial supply chain use case that DeepRL can be applied to.
Okay. Any others?
Routing. So fleet routing. So you could call it a traveling salesman problem, you know, on the scale of an army. So fleet routing obviously is something that most large organizations confront when they're delivering things. And that too is an optimization problem where you care about speedy delivery, minimizing carbon emissions, distance traveled, all the costs associated with it. Right? So fleet routing is another problem that this can be applied to. Inside the walls, right? If we just pretend for a moment that kind of intralogistics or industrial control is really a part of supply chain, most scheduling problems, processing those items through machines, even put away problems, stocking them in a warehouse, those are coordination problems that DeepRL can apply to, and where we have, you know, where we're working with partners to show how that can be done.
And how does your solution, how does it work with existing systems? Because, you know, if you're thinking of to your last example, working within a warehouse, most organizations would have some kind of warehouse management system already in place. How do you fit in with that?
So a lot of the data is contained in ERP systems like SAP. It's not hard to get that data out. So that historical data we can train on. But for the domain expertise, we will talk to people operating those physical systems, and where it's necessary, you know, we'll work with people to create the virtual models, the simulation of the physical system, so that we can train on greater variability and offer predictive resilience. And then the decisions, those, say, scheduling decisions, right, are just like the scheduling decisions that are being made already by optimizers like IBM Cplex, like Gorobia. So there are optimizers out there that are already helping people make decisions. Right, there are slots in the system that are open to the decisions being made, right? And we would simply be another source of decisions, or in many cases, decision support. Right? So yes, people work with all kinds of, you know, warehouse management software, other kinds of industrial control software. It's easy to put something on a dashboard, right?
Fair enough. And you, I mean, I know you are based on the US West Coast, but Pathmind, is it US West Coast? Is it all of North America? Is it all of, you know, North America, Europe, EMEA, Africa, Asia? You know, what's your kind of market reach?
Yeah. So you're right. We're headquartered in the Bay Area. That's been that's been a funny situation for the last year or year and a half with COVID, right? Being headquartered anywhere, I'm not sure that even makes sense everybody's working remote and you're under a lockdown. But we have a team here. We have a lot of remote team members as well in Europe and Asia and Latin America. So we see a lot of interest from Europe, particularly the manufacturing centers of Europe, like Germany and Northern Italy. We see a lot of interest from Latin America, particularly the, you know, natural resource intensive parts of Latin America, because, you know, things like mining are obviously the start of the supply chain, feeding elements into the system. So, you know, if you want to talk about manufacturing centers, obviously East Asia is a major one.
Yep.
Right. We're working with partners that are located on several continents, and many of them in themselves are global companies, right, with intensely complex supply chains stretching across oceans.
So, Chris, we're coming towards the end of the podcast now. Is there any question I haven't asked you that you think I should have, or any topic we've not touched on that you think people should be aware of?
So I've mentioned deep reinforcement learning a couple of times, Tom. I think it's a term your readers and your listeners are going to want to understand better. And I can say a few words about it, but they should really do their own research as well, because they're going to be hearing it a lot more in the years to come.
Okay.
They're going to be hearing it more because it's a kind of AI that applies to the problems they care about. So in May of this year, DeepMind, so Alphabet's main AI think tank, DeepMind, released a paper saying reinforcement learning is probably the path to AGI, to artificial general intelligence, which is to say to a super intelligence that can solve most problems better than humans can, right? So this kind of AI that I'm talking about that solves multi-echelon inventory optimization could also be the path to superintelligence, right? And that's an extraordinary thing to be able to say. And there's a lot of hype in the field, and people are rightly skeptical when they hear such claims. They've probably heard them many times before. But this is a very credible source, which is DeepMind.
Yeah.
They're at the forefront of the field. They're making a very big claim. They're putting their reputation on the line. And I don't think they'd do it if they didn't both believe it and have evidence for it. Now, so that'll have repercussions in our society way beyond supply chain, and people should start thinking about that. So what they're saying is that reinforcement learning learns from rewards. If you've ever had a pet and you've ever had to train the pet to do things you want it to do and not make a mess in the house, right? You've given it treats and you probably swatted it on the butt, right? That's reinforcement learning. Positive and negative rewards for behavior, right? So what DeepMind is saying is that intelligence itself is a response to positive and negative rewards. So intelligent behavior can emerge in a system where you simply give it positive and negative rewards, those rewards and penalties, just like you and I face in life itself. Right? So we humans are kind of evolutionary specimens that have evolved, you know, a certain intelligence some of the time. in response to an environment that is pretty clear in its rewards and penalties to us, or at least has been over many generations. So what DeepMind is saying is those analogies apply very well to how we can grow intelligence artificially in silicon. And I think, so that's it's creepy and it's exciting.
Skynet.
And it's exciting, right? And if people want to understand what that technology is, they can, and especially in a domain where they're already experts, they can see what we're doing, right? And we can show them, look, here are some strategies, some unforeseen strategies or emergent behavior that our algorithms have learned in response to the systems they've built, right? That show them a new path through it. And you get these moments and it sends a shiver down your back where you're like, wow, that was smart. And I didn't know that that's what it should do. Right.
Very cool. Very cool. Fascinating. Chris, if people want to know more about yourself, Chris Nicholson, or about Pathmind or DeepRL or any of the other topics we chatted about today, where would you have me direct them?
You know, they can go to our website, pathmind.com. We have a lot of examples and demos there of different supply chain problems that we work on. We have a wiki that talks a lot about AI. It's like Wikipedia, but it just covers a lot of AI topics. So they could read about deep reinforcement learning on the Pathmind wiki. If they want to know more about me and my background, I've got a LinkedIn page. You know, I have a checkered history as a journalist. They can read all about that.
Superb, superb. Chris, that's been great. Thanks a million for coming on the podcast today.
Tom, thanks for having me.
Okay, we've come to the end of the show. Thanks everyone for listening. If you'd like to know more about digital supply chains, head on over to sap.com/digital supply chain or simply drop me an email to tom.raftery@sap.com. If you like the show, please don't forget to subscribe to it in your podcast application of choice to get new episodes as soon as they're published. Also, please don't forget to rate and review the podcast. It really does help new people to find the show. Thanks. Catch you all next time.